You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble. I'm in the lead chair for Nathan Zagura, who is still on vacation. And as always, Monday, Tuesday was led by Jim Donovan. And I am sitting here with Andrew Gribble. And I mentioned before break, a very interesting mock draft, I believe 4.0, came out by Chad Reuter of NFL.com. What's not interesting is he has the Cleveland Browns taking a quarterback at number 2 overall. And that quarterback, as many mock drafts have us taking, is Carson Wentz out of North Dakota State. And I know, as I mentioned to you this off air, your eyebrows kind of raised about our second round choice, and that is Sterling Shepard, the wide receiver out of Oklahoma. And then in the third round, he had us going with Leonte Carew, the wide receiver out of Rutgers. So, A, do you like the mock draft, first and foremost, before you get into the guys with quarterback, wide receiver?
I'm fine with going pretty heavy on wide receiver
because
as we with the
it's
question,
definitely need.
The question we put out there earlier, what position group are you worried about the most on offense right now? I think it's wide receiver because you don't know what you got that position. You're down two players from
Heartline
last year.
Gabriel Hawkins.
Yeah, and
that's
think,
it.
Yeah, and you need more.
Prior.
You definitely need more at that position. So I think clearly it's going to be a position that's addressed in the draft. The reason why I raise my eyebrows, though, is that you look at, I think Sterling Shepard is a great player.
Yes.
Very productive. And I think he'll be a good NFL player, but you look at his measurables, he's 5'10", 194 pounds. This
right.
team already has two undersized receivers. Hugh Jackson's talked about wanting to get bigger at that position. He likes the big targets. He had a bunch of them in Cincinnati. And then you hear what Sashi Brown said on the show last month. The kind of guy they're missing was the possession receiver that can go up and make tough catches.
And that's Laquon Treadwell.
Right.
That's a bigger
kind of receiver. So that's why I don't know if it jives with what this team wants outside of the fact, and it goes back to that discussion, if he's on the board and he is far and away the best player available, then you add him to the roster.
Sure.
And then make it work with what else you got around you.
And Leonte Carew, a very productive receiver out of Rutgers, probably would be, you know, a borderline first round, if not a lock of a second round, if it were not for some off the field issues. And your take on him?
Yeah, I mean he's a little bit bigger. He's 6'2", 211, and again, it's about harnessing what a guy if his mind is right, focused on football. You've done the background work. You've talked to every single person that's ever come into contact with him as far as you can go, and kind of just see where his head's at. And even then, at that point, every draft pick is a calculated risk. But the risk increases when a guy has shown a track record of not behaving, having the what looks like an assault arrest, which was dropped. But we'll see. It's just that I think that's why you're going to see him as a day two, potentially early day three kind of receiver. And again, it's almost like trial and error with these receivers. You see it all over the league. A guy like a Marvin Jones can get drafted later, produce, and then go and sign a huge contract.
Yeah.
For every one mid-round receiver, there's three who didn't make it.
Correct.
And so it's just about, you know, turns at the table. It's why you see about accumulating draft picks. Just turns at the podium. The more you have, the odds are in your favor, the more you're going to get it right. But you're going to have some that still even don't work out.
So to go back to one of our Ohio Business Machine Hot Topics, and you kind of brought it up about the wide receiver position, and I kind of threw this out. Biggest concern offensively, yours would be lack of depth at wide receiver?
Yeah, I think it's because even though you've lost two really important pieces on the offensive line, you can kind of sort of fill in some holes with some moves that have been made and players you have on the roster. You look at Cam Irving, Austin Pastor. I think if you had to put out a team today, Cam Irving's probably going to be your center. Pastor is probably going to be your right tackle to go along with the rest of the offensive line. Now you look at the wide receivers, you just haven't seen the corresponding moves at this point, which leads you to believe it's going to happen in the draft because you've lost Travis Benjamin, who was your far and away your best wide receiver last year, even though Gary Barnage was your leading receiver overall. And then you've got two guys at that position that are coming off seasons that ended with injuries, Brian Hartline, Andrew Hawkins, and I think Taylor Gabriel's coming off a season that didn't live up to the expectations that anyone had for him that year. So you're banking on him bouncing back. So you're just not a lot of proven options at that position. Or sure things at that position right now, and then obviously the ambiguity with Josh Gordon at this point.
Sure.
So you just don't just a lot of question marks at wide receivers that have not been answered, but there's still time to answer those questions.
And for me to expound on that point, the concern for me is still wide receiver, and it might even be another tight end outside of Barnage, which is and how we're going to address that. And I would think it would have to be via the draft. Because the reason why the offensive line doesn't bother me a whole lot, you mentioned the two guys, Cam Irving, you know, Austin Pastore. I think, and I also, for whatever reason, I have faith in Hugh Jackson to customize what we do. What we do is not going to be what Cincinnati does.
Right.
What we do is not going to be exactly what he did in Oakland or what he did with Flacco in Baltimore. What we do is going to be a lot of what he did in those places, but it's going to be customized to the individuals that we have in those roles. Meaning, if we can develop RG3 or that young quarterback to get rid of the football, as Nathan says, in 2.5 seconds or less, you know, to process information, get rid of the football, take our spots down the field. You know, Hal Hunter just walked by the dog bowl. Again, our strength conditioning staff is going to have these offensive linemen more physical. It's going to be a power run game, so it's going to look different. I have faith that offensively, Hugh Jackson as our play caller will understand the strengths and weaknesses of his offensive scheme and players, and will play with and call plays within themselves. So I don't have it, but if you don't have the playmaker outside to stretch the field, right, to go up and get the jump ball, to make those, you know, tight window catches for your young quarterback or not so accurate RG3, that concerns me.
Yeah, it's almost like when you this like using a basketball analogy, like a lot of the Cavs who signed some big contracts owe a lot of their money to what LeBron has made them to into players. Guys like you're seeing Iman Shumpert get a huge contract when he doesn't play with LeBron, not as good. And then you're looking at guys like Sanu and Marvin Jones. They became great options in that offense because of what A.J. Green was able to do on the other side
Absolutely.
Of the field. So you wonder if those guys can produce at a similar level or grow into a number one receiver role. Some do, some don't. But they got exposure because of what A.J. Green was able to do. Right now, you're looking at the Browns' offense. You don't. There aren't A.J. Greens on every NFL team.
No, there's not.
There aren't even A.J. Greens on a third of the NFL team. So you've got to make what you've got with what you've got. And right now, I think there's just some spots that are going to be filled by players that aren't on the roster yet.
I agree. And, I mean, Josh Gordon could be that A.J. Green type of guy for us, but, you know, he's in question. We'll get to our defensive concern a little bit later in the show, but right now I want to knock out two calls before we grab a break. Let's go to Alan in the car who's been waiting patiently. What's up, Alan?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate it.
I'm 58 years old, lifelong Browns fan, internal optimist. And I hear a lot of the Browns fans, you know, since 1999 we're doing this. But in my mind, our franchise is only 4 or 5 years old. Is that when the Haslams took over?
Four.
4 years. So in my mind, that's when the Browns began. I mean, it's just a fresh start, new ownership. And I'm all in for the reboot and all the stuff that's going on and quarterback at number two. But my analogy is that I just believe in the ownership that people don't get to the success that they have without making mistakes. And I know like with the current election that's going on, you got everybody, whether you like Trump or not, they make a big deal out of him filing bankruptcy so many times, but he still has a little more in his bank account than I do.
Yep.
And in my mind, Jimmy Haslam, you don't get to the success that he has without making mistakes along the way. And there was a caller yesterday that made mention of the fact that there's a guy that owned up to his mistakes. He's learning from them. And I'm in total support of what's going on.
And, Alan, before I let you go, do you like the RG3 signing?
Oh, absolutely. I'm all for second chances.
Okay.
And I believe the new it'll be good, and I believe in Hugh Jackson. And I also believe Goff at number two
because
he's 21.
Yep.
And so he's a few years behind RG3. So he has a couple years to develop. When RG3 is pushing 30, he'll be 26 or whatever. And we're good for the next decade or so. So that's my thought.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. We're going to grab a timeout. Keep the calls coming, 216-578-0850. You've also been very active on Twitter. We'll get to your tweets after this break. We'll be right back. DJ Khaled.
Yeah. All I do is win. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. You can always participate, 216-578-0850, and we've asked for your tweets at Browns_daily. So I will bring in our producer, The Dreamer, and he'll hit some of your tweets. What's up?
All right, so we got two from this guy because I like both of them that he has.
All right.
His name is Brian Vaughn. He is at @TheReal_BV.
Okay.
The first one is for you guys. In Ray Horton's defense, does he value edge rushers over corners? The Steelers seem to take that approach.
Edge rushers over corners. If I had, again, I haven't had the opportunity to talk to Ray in depth, and I haven't truly studied Ray's defense in other places. But to answer your question, they're probably both just as important, but I'm going to give the edge to edge rushers.
Yeah.
And the ability to get to the passer, disrupt the passer, you know, knock him down, feel the heat, and you can have good talent on the back end and don't have to have high-level talent on the back end.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you there, because I think there's been a couple things that have been said that leads me to believe that that's true. Is one, Hugh Jackson last week at a owner's meeting said that if it was up to Ray, he'd hit the quarterback when he's getting off the bus. That's how important it is. I think that was a philosophical decision that was made when Hugh Jackson brought Ray Horton back here. I think they were on the same page with that. And I think, too, when Ray Horton had his introductory press conference here last month, he made this kind of long analogy, like talking, it was the day the Jim Brown statue was announced. He's like, until that kind of player is the dominant player in the NFL right now, then I won't value pass rushers. But now it's a quarterback league. It's all about getting guys after the quarterback, and I think that's going to be the emphasis, is finding so many other ways, finding, as he said, a Batman to Paul Kruger's Robin, or Robin to Paul Kruger's Batman, finding multiple ways to get to the quarterback instead of just relying on one guy.
And before we go back to the next tweet, is it safe to say that the way things are setting up for Paul Kruger, you know, his salary goes up another year, but he was a big free agent signing when Ray Horton was a defensive coordinator, that he's being primed to have a very big year again for the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I think from a production standpoint, I think he did okay with what he was asked to do last year.
I agree.
I think he handled it well, and I think it just, he wasn't positioned to get after the quarterback as much as he was the previous year when he put up double-digit sacks. So, you know, that's what you hope. I think we'll talk to Paul here in the coming weeks when he's back in the building, but you know, there's got to be a big level of excitement for what he's facing this year, and kind of, you know, he's at that stage of his career, the prime, right in the kind of the middle there, what you think he's going to be able to do. So I think he's a guy that you hope to see. I know we talk about it's not all about sacks, but you want to see a guy that's in Kruger's position put up more sacks than he was able to do last year.
Absolutely. Dreamer, what's that other tweet you got
there, bud? So the other one is more of a lighthearted one, not really football related, but okay. I was interested in this. And the same guy, TheReal_BV, wanted to know if, Matt, did you get a kite for Easter, or better yet, did you get one for @NathanZagura?
Nathan Zagura has not gotten a kite yet because Nathan Zagura is on vacation, so otherwise it would sit here and collect dust. I did not get a kite. And actually, neither my son got a kite for his birthday, which is just before Easter. So we're just waiting for a nice windy day in our cul-de-sac to bust out those kites. It's an inside joke.
Okay, I've got a glazed overlook on my
face.
Yes,
you do.
I was like,
it was okay.
What are we
talking about? The question was, like, what's one of the top gifts you could get in your Easter basket? This is prior to Easter, the show before Easter. And I was like, it's spring. It's, you know, you get windy days with storms rolling in. What's better in an Easter basket than a killer kite to go out and fly?
I've never flown a kite.
Okay, you've
never
Period. See,
so
then answer that question in hindsight.
I need one. I would think, you know, my birthday's in September. Just mark it down right now. I guess I need one because I've
are you
never
into Star Wars?
Yeah.
Okay, because they have the Millennium Falcon and an X-Wing fighter at Costco on the spool, the nice spool.
Okay.
Okay, $13.99.
I would need, like, instructions and lessons.
That's easy.
Okay. I don't know if I'd be intuitive enough to do that.
You have to be a little bit of an athlete and take off and run with it to get it up, but then you're good to go. But how about, I'll ask you that now. Best Easter gift ever? In hindsight.
I don't know if I've been an Easter gift kind of guy.
Okay.
Like, I think we had, like, baskets with
the
candy.
There
was never, like, it was never, like, gifts you could grab outside of Easter candy. But I was always partial to the Cadbury cream eggs, and I'm completely as anti-Peeps as it gets.
Okay.
I think they're like the worst possible food on earth. Like there's Peeps, and I don't know what is worse. Like it's truly the worst thing you could eat.
Okay. Dream, you got any more tweets?
Yes, I do. All right. We got a tweet from Kevin Beard at the _ Kevin Beard. And he wants to know what
friend of the show.
Right, exactly. What would an NFL locker room have done to a rookie if he pulled a D'Angelo Russell?
Ooh. This is a good question because the dynamic of an NBA locker room made up of 13 prima donnas and an NFL locker room made up of 53 men, maybe about the same prima donnas, but the other 40 are rough around the edges, okay? If it's a guy like D'Angelo Russell, who would essentially be, this is like your number two overall pick. This would be like this year's number two overall pick doing it this upcoming offseason, going into the 2016 season or during the 2016 season at some point. I would say the leaders of the locker room, at some point or another, when no coaches are around and there's very little supervision, would corner this individual and bully slash intimidate and scare the you-know-what out of this guy.
And here's my question to you. How much does it matter? Is this situation worse because of how bad the Lakers are? This is a losing locker room, playing out the string of a season. I imagine they don't care that he was the number two pick in the draft last year.
No.
His teammates.
They don't.
They value each other the same.
Correct.
I don't think they care about that. And I think Byron Scott's gone on record saying he's not going to address it or even talk to D'Angelo Russell about it because this is a locker room situation, so he's letting it handle itself.
Yes, it wouldn't. I'll say this: in a veteran laden team, this would not go very well. In a losing team or a losing young team, it still wouldn't go all that well because some of the elder statesmen would take offense to that, or some of the younger players would bring it to the elder statesmen or the committees, as some teams have, and it would be dealt with internally. I think the coaches would try to get involved, but the players themselves are a governing body over stupid things like this. So it wouldn't be pretty. Let's jump back on the phones for a couple more. And then, surprise, surprise, we're going to get Jason Gibbs jumping back in the booth after the next break. Let's go to Rick in Royalton. What's up, Rick?
Hey, I just want to know, you know, we're talking about maybe the Browns drafting a corner in the second round. I mean, in the second pick.
Yep.
What happened to the one guy they drafted last year in the seventh round that tore up his knee?
Ifo Ekpre-Olomu.
Yes. What's his status?
Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, I think he's close, and I think it's going to be a guy you monitor. He's clearly going to be able to do a lot more.
I agree.
In off-season workouts,
he's been
OTAs,
working hard.
But I think it's still going to be – I think you're still waiting to see with what you can get, because this is a serious, very serious knee injury that he had at a position where your knees are very important in terms of every fraction of a second that you need. I think – being away from the field as long as he has, it'll take some time. Again, I don't think he's a guy you can bank on, but he's a guy, if he comes along, he has, I think, projected second-round talent, and certainly with his size, fits that nickel role, you would think, with what his skill set offers. But, you know, we talked to him recently this offseason. He's in good spirits. I think he's been he was in meetings a lot last year, learned a lot. His teammates respect him. It's just a matter of getting back into football shape, which is something that he's probably not in even as much training as he's been able to do.
Could he be a guy that starts on the PUP and maybe comes in that week 8 designation?
I would think he's further along than that.
Okay.
To say that at this point, but it still could be. I mean,
okay.
I wouldn't rule it out at all at this point, but I think he feels like he's going to be ready to be thrown into the fire. But I think obviously with a guy coming off this serious injury,
sure,
you're not going to just throw him into the fire right away.
Gotcha. Okay, one more call. Let's go to Jeff in Canton. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, gentlemen. My question or concern, I guess, with the RG3 signing is having if he's going to be the projected starter, having a second or third team quarterback, second and third team quarterback that can't run the same playbook as RG3. So with that, is there any possibility that Kaepernick is still alive to possibly come to the Browns? Because that would make me feel a whole lot better about RG3, the signing, and having the same skill set, essentially, so that if RG3 gets dinged up, you know, now you got to go to quarterback two, and quarterback two can't run the same plays as RG3. It puts a big dent in your offense and your game plan. I'd love to have another guy to plug in there, that, or possibly even beat him out for a starting job. that can run the exact same plays, and you don't really miss a beat.
Well, you know, I think that it's incredibly unlikely that you would add Kaepernick at this point because, one,
very unlikely.
The financials are just huge for him
Correct.
Right now, and he's only got a few more days before he's guaranteed, maybe just a couple more days before he's guaranteed that money by being on the 49ers roster. And I think the second thing, too, is maybe I think after his rookie season, I think Robert Griffin III, he kind of, it's been out there, he wanted to develop more into a pocket passer. So I think you're not going to see him put in a situation that's putting him in harm's way, like running zone read nonstop over and over again. You're not going to see that out of him.
No.
And two, say you draft a guy like a Carson Wentz, he's a guy that can move. I mean,
yes.
He's a guy that can do, if you do have those plays in your playbook, he's a guy that can also execute those as well. I don't think you need another guy that's just made his bones by running and throwing. I think what you're going to see out of Robert Griffin III is more of a pocket passer. That's what Hugh Jackson's been around. I think you'll see some plays that maybe get something out of his mobility, because obviously he's blessed with some talent that most quarterbacks don't have. But I wouldn't expect him to just be kind of a total running quarterback.
I completely agree with you. I think Hugh Jackson's going to run his scheme, and RG3 and Wentz, Goff, Lynch, Cook, Jones, whoever it is we draft this year, are gonna learn the Hugh Jackson system. Hugh Jackson will accentuate what every individual does well. If RG3 struggles in the pocket, he's going to have to throw from the pocket, but then you add little wrinkles that make RG3 the player that he can be as an athlete. If Goff processes information very well and is not quite the athlete, you're going to give him those reads. Let him get in, you know, get in and make those decisions with levels of passes and crossers and things like that. And let him process that information. You're going to accentuate people's strengths and deviate away from their weaknesses. And that's the cat and mouse game or the chess game that offensive and defensive coordinators play throughout a football game. Well, we're going to take a timeout. We're going to get Gibbs back after the break. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble, and we are joined by our esteemed producer, Jason Gibbs. What's up, Gibbs?
Hi, guys.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
How has the day gone? Did Mike Dreamer do everything he needed to do?
Mike Dreamer was very good, and
very nice.
The gentleman, what is it, Hugh, what's his name?
Kellenberger.
Hugh Kellenberger was good. Gave us some good insight on Laremy Tunsil, Laquan
good.
Treadwell.
I got the assist
and Robert,
from on
finish
that.
It.
Kim Dichie.
Three top prospects, and then he gave us his sleeper coming out of Ole Miss as well in the draft.
Good.
Late round guy. But everything was good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, can I complain? You set up the show very well.
I figured you guys would be more than capable of handling things. I just, unfortunately, was in a meeting a little longer than I wanted.
That's all right. No worries. But you do have some calls, so let's go to Kenny in Champaign, Illinois. Illinois.
Illinois. How are you gentlemen doing?
Good, brother. How are
Great.
You?
I like Carson Wentz. And Jared Goff, I like Jared Goff better.
Why?
But I think the Browns I would like to see him draft Robert Kendiche or Miles Jack. Get a defensive end or Ellis or Dodge from Clemson. Because the Browns, they haven't had a pass rusher in so long, you can get a quarterback later in the draft and go with that defensive end. Because those are some prime defensive ends. I couldn't see them passing that up. And in my opinion, could this be a smokescreen that keeps saying Wentz, that keeps saying Goff? It could be a smokescreen. We may take a defensive end. I would like to see that defensive end.
Defensive end at number two overall. And Kenny, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. And I'm asking you, Andrew, the same way that I said Miles Jack at number two has to be, you got to give me Luke Kuechly type of play as a rookie, actually on a rookie contract.
Right.
So the expectation to take a defensive end at number two would be to give me J.J. Wattish type of play on a rookie contract. And I just don't think that's in this draft right now.
No, and I just, if that's what you ultimately want and ultimately see, then I would first explore trading down. If that's
correct.
If that's the, what you're
seeking out.
Because
you can get it inside
out.
Seven.
Right, because you can get that kind of player, especially Kandice, who, I mean, I think there's questions around him that it'll even be a first-round pick.
Right.
Because of all the off-the-field concerns and the on-field concerns about taking plays off. So I think if you could probably get him at 32 if that's what you want to get. If you're out on the quarterbacks at number two, I think you owe it to yourself to explore trading down first before you go and make that pick.
And Kandice, and your understanding thus far of the Ray Horton scheme, would he fit? Because I know we talk about Bosa. Bosa wouldn't fit because he'd have to either bulk up and play like J.J. Watt at 280 plus. At a 5 technique or a 7 technique along the line of scrimmage as a defensive end in a 4-3 scheme, or he'd have to kind of lean down and be a pass rusher, which he's a little too big for, a la Von Miller.
Yeah, I think Kandice makes sense as a 3-4 end.
Okay.
I think he's big enough, and I think he could do it. I think he played a lot of 4-3 D-tackle throughout his career. They put him all over the place because he was the best player on their defense, and unfortunately they put him on offense sometimes and it didn't go so well. So I think that he's enough of an athlete where I think he could fit, and he's just a bigger guy than Bosa.
Sure.
I think he could never be like a 3-4 outside linebacker.
Right.
I think he's going to be up front, and I think he would make sense in a 3-4. It's just a matter of you got to do a lot of homework on him because there's just a lot there.
And just to counter his other point is, with a franchise that's been lost at quarterback for the last 15, 16 years and the jersey that is synonymous for the city of Cleveland, there's no way that the talk of Goff or Wentz is a smokescreen at all at number two, is it?
Yeah, it's got to be realistic. I mean, this is a team that needs a quarterback right now, and I think even though you go out and sign Robert Griffin III, nothing's been guaranteed to him. He knows that. It's been made clear. It was made clear in the press release. He's going to compete for the job. The job isn't his. So even though I would pencil him in as the likeliest guy to be the starter for the first game of the season, I think the Browns are far from done.
And really quick, we'll hit on one more topic. We might grab a quick break and then come back and go around the league. Your overall take, and I don't know if we've asked you this on the show, Josh McCown, you know, we're kind of in a rock and a hard place now because time is ticking down where, you know, the workouts here with Hugh Jackson and the strength staff are going to be starting. You know, the draft is going to be here before you know it. You know, if you take a quarterback at two, that's quarterback at two, Robert Griffin III, Josh McCown, Austin Davis, all technically under contract. What is your mindset in regards to Josh McCown, and what happens? And if it does have to happen, does it have to happen very soon?
Well, I don't know if it has to happen very soon if you're going to move him. I don't think there's any financials that stand in the way of that. I think I feel like if you're looking to move him, I think there's a market for him. I think there was a story out today linking the Dallas Cowboys as a potential option for him. But ultimately, you can still decide at the end of the day to keep him around. If you like having him around a group of young quarterbacks, I think he's a great guy, had a great attitude throughout this past season. But you move him, you get the salary off, you use it elsewhere. You decide to keep him, then you're obviously going to have to make moves with the other quarterbacks in the roster because at some point it becomes too many. But I don't see like a deadline out there where you got to get rid of him. I don't see any harm and him being around for workouts.
Okay.
If you're ultimately going to get rid of him, if not, if you keep him, I think he's a guy that's respected by everyone in this building.
I agree,
and it's he'd be nothing but a good influence on whoever else you're bringing in there.
And something else I'll throw at you while we're on the McCown topic, and I guess I even have to, you know, remember myself. You ultimately have the option to cut him at any point, and the monies that he's due, you know, on the deal that he signed last year is not significant at all. A majority of that is a part of his, you know, I think it's $4 or $5 million is his base salary, and maybe $1 million or slightly over $1 million is the bonus that we would basically eat in cutting Josh McCown. But is part of this waiting game and kind of backing the Denver Broncos and backing the New York Jets, you know, without a Ryan Fitzpatrick deal done and potentially having Geno Smith, you know, lead their football team, are we kind of playing a waiting game where it's like, well, what asset are you going to give us that we can apply in this year's draft in exchange for Josh McCown, where we unload that $6 million and get an asset in return?
Right. I mean, there's three major teams with real uncertainty at quarterback right now. I mean, you got Denver, New York Jets, and San Francisco. I mean, there truly still have to be moves made. Ryan Fitzpatrick is still on the market right now. I mean, everyone knows it seems like the negotiations are just between him and the Jets at this point, but you know, there's still dominoes to fall at the most important position in the NFL with three significant teams, one of which just won the Super Bowl. Another one was
playoff
was a playoff contender, blew it at the end of the year and should have been in the playoffs. And then the 49ers team that's under a new coach with a weird situation where we don't even know if the quarterback wants to be there. So I think as much as we like to think that the offseason's only a week with free agency, I mean, there's still a lot of time for a lot of moves to be made there. I mean, there's still two starters from Cincinnati's defensive backfield on the market right now in free agency. I mean, there's now it's the time where, you know, these guys are really going to take their time, pick their spots. I think every team is in draft mode right now, maybe putting this stuff on the back burner. So I think there's still a lot of time for this stuff to unfold.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to grab a break. When we come back, we're going to go around the league, another break, final segment from me and Gribbs. Thanks for listening to ESPN 850 WKNR.
Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble, and Jason Gibbs here with you, wrapping up the show, our last segment of the day, and we were going to go around the league with Jason Gibbs.
Number one.
Question number one today, guys. Is Colin Kaepernick still a 49er after Friday's deadline of sorts for San Francisco? If not, who is he suiting up for?
I think he's going to be a 49er because I feel like if a deal was going to happen, it would already happened. I just think there's too much going on there. And I think Denver believes that they have a team built, that they don't need a star at quarterback. They don't need a guy like him to win. They can win with him, and they can win without him. That's why I don't think they're desperate to part with much.
Almost like Sanchez. I mean, he fits that mold pretty well, and he's already there in Denver. So I'm going to agree with Andrew. I believe he stays a 49er. This late in the game to find someone to take on that bonus that he's due and guarantee him that amount of money. And really, you look at the last 2 years in the body of work and the fact that Blaine Gabbert beat him out just in 2015 is scary for me. And I actually think from a Browns perspective, I would take now in hindsight, even now that he is a Brown, I would have taken RG3 over Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Gibbs?
Number two.
Question number two today, guys. Which player will have the biggest bounce back year in 2016? Jordy Nelson, Le'Veon Bell, Jamal Charles, or Steve Smith? There was a good article on NFL.com about that today.
I'm going with Le'Veon Bell because, one, I want to say he's the youngest of the four on that list. And, two, you look at what D'Angelo Williams, who's an older guy, they plugged him into that offense and he was producing some huge numbers. I just think he's in a system right now in Pittsburgh that – he's going to just be a huge just stat producer, big-time running back. And I think he's shown that before, and he was showing it up until that injury.
Simply for not agreeing, I think Le'Veon Bell's probably the top of that list, but to go with someone else, I'm going to say Jordy Nelson just because Aaron Rodgers is still in his prime. You know, maybe got year, two, maybe 3 years left in his prime. Randall Cobb in his prime. They just added the Cook kid from the Rams. And so he missed that weapon. And I think McCarthy and that entire offensive staff is going to be refreshed to have Jordy Nelson. And the connection that they've had since I was there 5 years ago is when it all started. We'll continue there.
Number three.
Which team has the most to gain or lose in the first round of this year's draft? Denver, Tennessee, Dallas, or Jacksonville?
I'm going with Dallas because they've got a really high pick, they've got a really good team, and they've got a quarterback with a very small window of how much longer he's going to be in the league. So I think there's so much talk about him, Dallas, drafting a quarterback. I think they need to draft a guy that can start right away and go all in with what they've got left in Romo and build the best possible team. So I think they're going to try to draft the player that's going to have the most immediate impact on this season.
Say it for me again now, Gibbs. Now, Denver, Dallas, Jacksonville, and who was the fourth?
Denver, Tennessee. Dallas or Jacksonville.
Okay, Tennessee, I don't believe so. Denver drafts late. They've got the defense, and I think Gribble made a great point about their quarterback. They don't need to have that guy. They just need a Peyton Manning-ish game manager. Not going Dallas, I think Jerry Jones is comfortable going 8-8 every year and saying they're going to win the Super Bowl the next year. So I'm going to go with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the reason why is because they've drafted Blake Bortles, they've added pieces around him. They, you know, you signed Tashaun Gibson, they've been very active in free agency and spent a lot of money. That's got to hit eventually, and I think they – didn't they extend Gus Bradley's deal by 1 year? Keeping him around?
Yeah, he's got this year to produce.
He's got this year to produce or nothing. So I'm going to say the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Number four.
Final question today, guys. In honor of the Warriors in the NBA going for the all-time best record in NBA history, where do you guys stand on going for regular season records in any sport? Should you rest guys for the playoffs or go for history?
I am in support of the Warriors going for history because I think they have the right roster to do it. They're young enough where I don't know if rest is going to matter. But in general, I'm all about de-emphasizing the regular season, especially in the NBA. I think NFL, it's almost I think the records have been set regular season-wise, have they not?
Yes.
Can you do any – has anyone gone 16-0? I think a couple people have.
Yes.
So I think NFL, you're going to rest.
I think NFL, you're going to rest. I think the Cleveland Cavaliers are bored with the long regular season, and I know that I am. You asked me about the game last night, and I go, I didn't watch 1 second of it. All I saw was whether they win or whether they lose, because it doesn't matter until they get into the tournament and have that opportunity. But I do think the Warriors are going to do it.
I do, too.
I think the percentage goes up by the win, and you said they're a young team, and they've been very healthy. Well, that's going to wrap it for us today. It's been a good show. Tomorrow, again, it will be the three of us, Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble, and Jason Gibbs with you for the full 2 hours. I want to thank the Dreamer for producing the first hour and a half of the show. Big thanks out to Hugh Kellenberger, the sports editor and columnist from the Jackson Clarion Ledger, for his recap on the Ole Miss Pro Day. Andrew, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow.
No problem.
And thank you all of you for participating all show long with your tweets and phone calls. That's what we do. We want to give you a voice and a platform to talk Cleveland Browns. For Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble, and Jason Gibbs, thank you for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.